when the people, the locals, people trying to, they were moving the car, you know, like, if you don't pay, we're going to hurt you. Knowing the locals and, you know, fills you up and fills you with a nice spark of life. This is my advice.
Is you accomplish this in a minivan?
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Listening to the GHT Overland Podcast.
We are super stoked to bring you this week's episode. We took a little break last week, as the spring weather in the Pacific Northwest unexpectedly gave us a few days of sun in a row. So that was kind of cool. Our property required some serious Scotch broom eradication, so we basically dropped everything to tackle that little monster. And although hillsides of bright yellow can be beautiful, we're hoping to return to no yellow in a few months to see our little fir trees exploding with growth. Next week, it's a root canal for me, so I will do my best to get the episode out. It's recorded, ready to roll. We're just going to have to wait to see what happens. Okay, so this week is quite possibly the most impressively creative, modest overlander to date. We often hear from guests about people they know still planning, still building, still doing you fill in the blank. That said, we also have great appreciation for the wisdom passed on by Mary of Monkeys on the Road, if you remember episode 112. And I think at least one other past guest quite a long time ago said basically the same thing, that throwing all caution to the wind may not be the best solution for everyone. So you do you. However, be real with yourself. Be careful not to postpone dreams too long, holding off until your setup is just perfect. That might end up as a little bit of a quagmire for you. For us, it's been a 5-year journey, so it doesn't always happen just overnight. Dropping everything just to run is not always the best solution for everyone, although you will consistently hear interview after interview after interview, just go do it. As you listen to this week's guest explain their overlanding vehicle of choice and their build-out strategy, you might want to replay it a few times, letting it truly sink in just how simple it truly could be. Destino Ushuaia, Jorge and his fiance did the Pan Am in such an impressive way with strong careers as marketing professionals. I'm sure they could have done things much differently. However, they intentionally chose simple. And from our point of view, they nailed it. Achieving their dreams of Ushuaia via a blend of a little bit of minivan, hiking, buses, and hitchhiking. And I think a couple plane rides here and there. Destino Ushuaia is a little bit of a tricky one, so if you have a hard time finding them on the Instagram, the links along with all the juicy details are in the show notes.
Be sure to tag us on the social medias so we can see what kind of awesomeness you're up to. Hashtag GHT Overland. This episode is brought to you by GHT Overland. Please keep in mind, we'd love your support. Keeping all the algorithm spirits happy is kind of necessary. So if you wouldn't mind, at minimum, Level 1 Love is taking a second to leave a rating on iTunes or the podcast platform you listen on. Anything from a short little I like it to whatever you're feeling. Without constant love from you, we're just sludge at the bottom of a lost cold coffee cup. Level 2 Love is found on ghtoverland.com. This is where we maintain a list of recommended apps, books, and gear. Thank you to everyone who has used these links. This also helps us earn a commission, costing you nothing extra. Level 3 Love is on Patreon. This is your opportunity to support the GHT Overland podcast with monthly little thank yous that help us pay web hosting fees, podcast hosting, and all the things that keep the podcast growing and improving. This is also how you get your hands on some sweet swag. Thank you for joining us as we pursue a renewed life mission of putting the best in people and nature on display, while tackling the ugly Goliath of today by consistently placing positivity and respect for others in front of everything else.
Jorge, welcome to the podcast, and thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate you taking the time to jump on a quick phone call.
No, I really thank you guys for the opportunity to share my experience with your listeners and to future travels, because sharing is really important for the trip preparation, whatever trip they are looking for to do. It's really important to have as much information as you can. And I'm here to have fun with you guys during this podcast.
Well, hopefully we don't let you down.
You're back home now, right?
Yeah. Right now we are in Canada. Canada became a home since 2016. And before we were living in Vancouver, then after our trip finished in the end of 2019, we decided to try Montreal, which is the French-speaking part of Canada, since my girlfriend is French, and it's closer to Europe, where our family actually live.
Okay.
And so we started living in Montreal since the beginning of 2020. Yes, this is home now.
Nice. So you and your girlfriend, you originally launched your adventure on the Pan Am when you lived in Vancouver, BC, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. And what year was that you started?
We started the trip in June 2018. We made the decision to do the Panamericana road trip in July 2017. So from the moment that we took the decision to make this trip, we started doing research. We started approximating how much money it would have been needed to do the trip. And we understood that the amount of money that you need for doing this sort of trip is obviously depend about several factors. One of the factors that for us was crucial was the kind of vehicle that we were going to purchase for doing this trip. So we didn't want to invest too much money on that. And just to make it simple, at the end, to make all the calculations by country, the 17 countries that we did with the car, it came out to around 27,000 per head, meaning around 54,000 Canadian dollars for the entire trip. For 1 year.
So you left in 2018, and then how long did it take you? How long were you on the road, on the Pan American Highway?
We initially planned to stay in the Pan American for 1 year. And the budget was for that one only year. But the trip started in Vancouver and went up to Alaska. Coming down from Alaska, we stopped at the Rockies in Banff. And we found actually a job opportunity there. So we stayed in Banff for around 2 months working. So those two extra months of work made up for other 6 months of travel in South America. So we,
oh, nice.
At the end, ended up doing the trip for 1 year and a half, 18 months.
Okay, well, that's super cool. So you decided to go north to the Arctic Circle first. And then it sounds like you came Correct. Down, obviously, through the Rockies. What was the rest? How did the rest of the West Coast look for you?
Well, why we decided to leave Vancouver in at the end of May, at the beginning of June, is because of the weather. The weather, you want to reach Alaska when it's not cold, obviously. And as well going down, you need to plan ahead not to hit Mexico during the storm season, the hurricane season. So you need, we decided to travel along the weather. So when we reach Banff in the Canadian Rockies, we continue down to following the Rockies until Yellowstone. And from Yellowstone, we continue going down up to the Utah. In Utah, we did all the national parks in Utah, and then we came back towards the ocean to California. And once we reached California, we continue going down up down to San Diego and did all Baja California Peninsula.
Oh, nice. Nice route. Yeah, good selection.
Yeah, yeah, and we did a lot of research why we decided to do Baja California instead of mainland Mexico. It's because it's safer and calmer, meaning that you will have less theoretical incidents along the road. Meanwhile, when people decided to do that, to go the other way in mainland Mexico, there is more crowd there, and it's a little bit more dangerous. So Baja California, we found it as a really good deal for us, and it's beautiful.
So you ended up going through 17 countries. I think you did something close to 70,000 kilometers or 43,500 miles, I think that ends up being. But most eye-popping to us is you accomplished this in a minivan.
Yes, correct. Yeah. So it was a funny fact regarding the minivan, because for doing this sort of trip, usually you need a bigger rig or a bigger transportation. And when we decided at the beginning to buy this little van, is because we were really aware that at one point it was supposed to break down. And so for us was, we spent little money, invest in this little van to go up to Alaska, and if it breaks down, okay, we leave it the car where it is, you know. And then we continue the road backpacking. This was our original idea. For the reason when we built our setup was not for the entire trip, was just for a short trip. And yeah, I mean, it's we had the luck to have this little minivan that lasted for the entire trip. And with no breakdowns.
That's crazy.
We ever changed anything to the van. We just changed the tires one in Colombia, because obviously after so many kilometers they were run out. But after than that, when I resold the van actually to another traveler. And I changed the battery, and that was all, you know.
And what was it
regarding the?
Was it a? I think it was a Freestar, a Ford Freestar. What year was it?
Ford Freestar 2006.
Oh, it was 1 year off. It was close. That is absolutely crazy. What gave you the guts to do this trip in a 2006 Ford Freestar?
Well, it's a funny story how we bought it, because really, we, you know how much we spent for that minivan? We spent in Canadian dollars, $3,000 Canadian dollars.
So awesome.
And so to do the setup, meaning the bed frame, we went to Home Depot. We rented the tools. we bought the wood inside the store, and we built it up outside the store. It took like 2 hours to do the bed frame, and that is all we did actually for the car.
Oh, you know, gosh,
we put our
amazing
things and we put our things, our backpacks, and all the most important things that we brought for this trip under the bed frame, and that's it. We didn't have any shower or any sort of, you know, refrigerator, anything. We just built that, and that's it. To keep things refrigerated, we just have the little bags for keep things fresh for during the summer. You know, the this Costco little bags, and that's it.
Wow. So how many miles did it have on it when you bought it?
How many miles? I can tell you in kilometers. It was 180,000 kilometers around.
That is so impressive. You do realize, Jorge, that there's lots of people listening right now that are trying to build the perfect rig, and they're waiting until everything is just perfect. And you bought a used 2006 Ford Freestar minivan. You went to Home Depot, rented the tools, spent 2 hours, and said, "It's good, let's go." And you did the entire Pan American Highway.
Yeah, that's pretty much the story, because trust me, when we did that setup, we thought that the car is supposed to break. You know, going to Alaska, there is nothing there, and the car can break. Nobody's going to save you, and that's it. You know, you just hope that the car is going to end up in a, I don't know, somewhere where they keep the cars up there. But and then we're supposed to go all the way up or down, like hijacking, you know?
Yeah. I say you win the gold, the silver, and the bronze. You get them all. It's so impressive.
Yeah, and the second part regarding our preparation is that we were really aware that we can lose absolutely everything at any time. Meaning that when we took our clothes or our more important values, we decided not to take them. We left pretty much everything in Vancouver. Regarding cloth, we had with us just the used cloth, you know, nothing fancy, no jewelry, anything of that on that sort. And the most important part for us were our documents, like a passport and things like this, that we always had with us in a little bag, you know. I don't remember in English the word, but it's the little bag that you had in your belly.
Yeah, like a fanny pack.
And we always had the documents there, you know, but we were really aware that we could lose everything at any moment. So for us, it was a fair deal not to invest too much money in anything, because we could lose it anytime. Even our phones, you know, we left our nice phones at in Vancouver, and we were just traveling with I remember an iPhone 6, paid, used it $150, and we did the entire trip with that. For the reason that even a camera, we had a used camera that we used for the trip, and we knew that, you know, at one point something was going to happen to that camera, so we didn't care properly.
Was there any name that you've given the van?
Oh, yes, Torito. Torito means a small bull.
Small
Why?
Bull.
Because after
that's awesome.
Because after few kilometers that we started with Torito, with the car still didn't have a name, but we saw it really resistant. It was doing really performing really well, and since it was little, we call it Little Bull. You know, Torito.
That is great. So let's go through a few little details on that amazing little bull van. How much fuel would it carry, and how far would that generally take you?
So with a full tank, the minivan used to make in a straight trip up to 800 kilometers.
Okay.
Yeah, 800 kilometers. And at that time, the price per liter, I can tell you.
And this is where the all-important record button was unknowingly unactivated. So there's that. So much for looking up conversions from metric to imperial during an interview. Multitasking fails again. Our apologies. Luckily, we caught it in time, so no worries. What we missed is the details on their setup, like fuel, water, meals, daily routines, a lot of really good information. So to get these details, jump on over to the show notes at ghtoverland.com. Everything is there. Much thanks to Jorge. Nonetheless, it seems a good time to let you know we're going to be adding a little mid-interview break to pay some bills. We appreciate you hanging tight, and we will be right back.
Perfect. Yeah. So two of my favorite places along the entire Panamericana road trip. First one was Alaska, because of the vastness and the wilderness that there is in Alaska. I never expected to be so alone, I must say. So the solitude and the animals that come towards you there is amazing, is incredible. It's really powerful as well, because, you know, we were in some places doing wild camping for days with no humans around, and we just going hiking and meeting animals all around. And it was just wow, you know, it really, really felt like in the movie Into the Wild at one point. But that part really touched me, because I was not expecting something like that. It's going to happen a little bit, but no. Then when you are in Alaska, you realize how big is Alaska. You realize it because you start going around with your car, and you just will see how many kilometers you are doing. And so you will be miscalculating what you at the beginning maybe foreseen to do with your car. So plan ahead on time and on resources, because Alaska is big and you will need more resources than expected to do that. The second one is the northern part of Argentina, which for us was a total surprise. Crossing the first border from Chile to Argentina, you will find an amazing scenery. There are the Andes Cordillera will drop of 1,000 meters in few kilometers, and you will touch a scenery that is out of this world. Colored mountains, there is proper cultures down there that have thousands of years of history, and they have excellent wine, which we love it, and it's not really expensive. We were ending up paying for a bottle in a winery even $1.50, you know, and thanks to the dollar being so strong right now, it's a really good deal. So we had a really good time in that part of Argentina.
$1.50 for a bottle of wine?
Yes, correct. We once paid that amount in a winery.
Well, heck, let's get
actually,
to it.
No. Not only that, in that winery, we did the winery tour where there has no fee. We made a wine tasting, and we bought one bottle of wine at $1.50.
That's amazing.
So it was just unbelievable. Unbelievable.
That's great. So yeah. What do you think was the number one biggest challenge you had to overcome during your trip?
Well, the biggest challenge per se was that bad experience with the road, the blockade that we had in Oaxaca, in which my girlfriend got scared when the locals trying to move, they were moving the car, you know, like if you don't pay, we're gonna hurt you. And to me, to see her in that way was a little bit scary, but I needed to keep myself, you know, strong. So I managed the situation in a safe way. I paid what I needed to pay, which was like 100 pesos, few dollars. But other than that, we never had any complication during the trip. Luckily, yeah, I must say, because you know, I saw so many rigs of cars, you know, breaking down, and we were so lucky to have this small Torito or little van that never broke down. So for us, it was really a relief. And actually, I think that for travelers, obviously, is home or transportation, and to have that little minivan that never broke down. It was really, really, really lucky for us to have it.
Yeah, that's amazing. Absolutely amazing. And was that, just curious, the blockade that you ran across in Oaxaca, was that the only one that you came across?
Yes, it was the only one. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Because once that we were in Mexico, there is another state which is kind of dangerous. It's called Chiapas. Maybe you heard about it. It's really close to Oaxaca, just south of Oaxaca. And there is actually a revolutionary army there, the Zapatista army. Maybe you heard about them. And so in the some centers in Chiapas, there are blockades. And there are two particular roads that are not really advised to drive through. One is from San Cristobal de las Casas, that is one of the most beautiful places in Chiapas. It's a must visit if you are in Chiapas. And there is the road 199 that you don't need, you is better not to take, because there are normally really bad blockades there. And actually, some people ended up dead. So, because there were some unfortunate guys that didn't want to pay the toll, and the people became really violent, and they ended up dead, you know. So this is one of the most concerning from the roads from the standpoint of traveling in Chiapas. And yes, we avoid it.
So if you come across a blockade and they're pretty aggressive in pushing the car, to pay 100 pesos, which is about just over 450 US, probably pay the $5 and just move along.
Yeah, so one important thing is that you never have to carry too much cash with you. Never, never. You just need to carry the cash that you need. This is one thing. You can show them how much money you have. You can say, I have just this. I can give you just that, you know? And that is the so they will say, it's fine, give me what you have. And they are going to leave you alone, you know?
Got it.
Just don't have too much cash in you, never. In Latin America, never. At least this is how it works for us, you know? And another thing is regarding traveling is that do not travel during the night. After dusk, do not travel. Travel just during the day.
Yeah, sounds like a smart move.
From Mexico onwards, we never had the problem. Problems that we had were normally during the late hours, during the night. I have to say another bad experience that we had. It was as well in Mexico. We were in Jalisco, where is tequila the city from. We were actually in Tequila, in the city. And during the night, we went to the festival of Tequila. There was around those days. So when we came back to our car, we were sleeping inside the city, just along the, you know, the, in front of the houses. And during the night, one guy broke inside the car, opened the car and broke inside the car. I was sleeping behind, and I saw this guy inside, right? So I jumped into him. Luckily, he didn't have any weapon or anything. So I asked him, what are you doing here? And he said, what are you doing here? I didn't see anybody, because we had the panels, you know, for that kept us warm. We used it as well, you know, to not let anybody to see inside the car. And so he was not aware that we were there. And so after speaking for a few minutes, the guy left. It was like a 4 in the morning. And the guy came back a few minutes after, 20 minutes after, asking to open the window. We were scared, obviously. And we opened the window, and he said, I can't let you stay here this night, but you need to pay. Otherwise, the boss is going to be angry. And at that point, we say, you know what? We'll think about it. We don't have any money. And we took the car and we left. It was like already 5 in the morning. And we went to stay close to the police station, because sometimes when you are running out of time in Mexico or in anywhere in Central and South America, if you want to be safe, it's safer to sleep in front of the police station. Eventually, the fire worker or the hospital, you know, somewhere where you can be protected. But that was the second time which we were a little bit scared and concerned regarding our safety. Yeah.
And can you find the local police station on iOverlander? Or did you use Maps?
Of course. No, you can find it in iOverlander, or it's better, you know, if you find it on Maps.me, which we were using. You just type police station, and they will find something for you. And it will navigate, you know, for you.
Excellent tips. What worked for you guys in managing laundry and hygiene?
Hygiene. Well, regarding clothes, we were using laundry services all the time. In every city where we stopped, we used to just to do our laundry there. And we never had a problem, actually, in the entire Panamericana. There are laundry services in any medium to big city size, you know. And we never had a problem in this regard. And then regarding ourselves, we were washing ourselves taking showers in the national parks, camping areas, in some little ports. There are showers for the fishermen. We were using those as well. If not, when you are properly in the wild, we will just go in towards a lake or a river. And for other hygienic needs, we were using always gas stations, national parks, visitor centers. Yeah, that's it. You know, pretty. For us, it was really pretty easy, because in the morning we used to wake up doing our, for example, in North America, our wild camping, taking our coffee. And obviously, you can wash yourself with a small little tank, you know, or water container. And for us, it was enough. If you need to warm some water, we're just warming up the water with our little stuff, the one that we used to cook. Because for cooking, we had those little stuff that sell for doing camping, you know, the little stuff when there is one single can.
So like we were using those to cook.
Yes, exactly. And we were using that little stuff to cook for us. And we were using that as well if we needed to warm some water to wash ourselves. Eventually, we were just warming up water on that.
Okay, cool. So what else, if you were to kind of lay out your kitchen setup, what did that look like? You had the jet boil. What else did you take with you to be able to cook meals on the road?
Okay, so we had two boxes. One was for plates and cooking hardware. You know, all these little things, we bought them in Dollarama, for example, just not spending much. And the second one was to keep our dry food essentials, pasta, rice, could be like salt, all these dry food essentials. And for our fresh food essentials, we were using the before mentioned cooling bag. So all the fruits and vegetables were in this cooling bag. And yeah, that's it. And we were cooking everything inside with this small stove.
Okay, cool. So you had did you have one pan and like one set of dishes for each of you?
Yeah, exactly. We have one pan, one little bowl, one small bowl just for warming some water. We had two plates, two glasses, one knife, you know, one pair of every single thing that you need to cook. Nothing fancy, just essential.
That's awesome, man.
And everything
simple.
Everything fit inside one these plastic containers, you know, that we bought to keep under the bed. And so we have these two boxes under the bed, and you know, you just manage to make it logistically easy to access from the bed. And from the car, and that's how it worked. So nothing really complicated. Meaning that for us to do our backpacking trips that we did previously to do the Panamericana road trip, the lightest we are, the better it is. So nothing really fancy or complicated. Something that just has to be useful.
And what was your favorite meal that you made on the road?
I was cooking often, and as I mentioned in the introduction, I'm a Peruvian Italian, but on the side of cooking, I'm a totally Italian, meaning that I was cooking a lot of pastas. And so I used to make pasta with zucchini and pesto, or I may say my favorite meal, with some Parmesan cheese that keep a little bit longer for as a food. And so this was the fastest and the tastiest food that I can advise to cook during the trip, because it takes a really not so long to cook. And other than that, all kind of pastas. But we never cook anything fancy, because the most gas you spend on the liters of the most are you going to spend on gas. And it's another cost. Even on this aspect, we were saving money. All the time that we needed to cook, we were cooking for just not one meal, but even for the day after, maybe.
That's awesome. Let's go over border crossings. How long did border crossings normally take for you, and any tips that you have for doing border crossings?
Okay. Regarding borders, you need to prepare your trip well in advance, meaning that you need to take a look if you will require any visa previously to travel. If you need to take a look if your passport is going to expire soon, you will need to replace it. All of this aspect regarding visa, I advise strongly to take a look beforehand, to be in front of the border. Otherwise, you don't want to be stuck with a passport that is going to expire and want to pass the border. Otherwise, it's going to take you forever. So this is the first tip that I must advise. And once that you have all of these aspects under control and you actually are physically before crossing the border, you just need to prepare the paperwork regarding what you need. Most of this information is already in iOverlander. So you need to take a look to the latest comments and what is needed to pass the border, because they will ask you pretty much always the same information. And in North America, regarding traveling, when I say North America, is Canada and U.S., you need just one insurance to travel in these two countries. And as soon as you touch Mexico and going downwards, you will need an insurance for every single country. Usually, in some countries, you can pay online your insurance before arriving at the border, and you just can print in advance the proof of insurance. And with that, you go to the border and say, you know what, my car is on my name, and I have the insurance and all of these things. And another thing that you need for sure to prepare before crossing the border is to make copies of every single thing. At least 3 copies of your driving license, of your car registry certificate, your insurance, and then your passport. At least 3 copies. I mean, we, for example, made at least 15 copies before leaving because we knew regarding this. But other than that as well, you may need to change some money to pay with local currencies in Central America. You can do it on site, meaning that there are people that are going to exchange money for you. So you just exchange what you need, because the cost of exchange at the border is obviously more expensive, at least in 95% of the cases. You just exchange what you need, and then you pay, and that's it. So the fees change from country to country, but they're not really exaggerated. One country that asks you for kind of deposit when you arrive is Mexico. You can take back this money when you leave the country, because for them, the important part is that with the car that you get in, you get out. So they make you pay kind of a lot of money to let you in, but as soon as you leave the country, they reimburse you this money, for example, through your credit card, if you pay through credit card. But normally, it never took us more than 1 day of preparation before a border crossing, because we already had everything arranged in advance.
Is there any specific border experiences that stand out for our listeners could learn from?
No. You just go directly to. There will be people offering services for you to help you to do the paperwork. I mean, it's not difficult, meaning that you just need to go straight and you say, you know, I need to cross the border. You need to learn maybe these few phrases in Spanish if they don't speak it English. But they know you, that you are foreigner, that you want to pass. So they will tell you. They will indicate you which is the right office, and you just need to show the papers that I told you. You know, you don't need anybody to do the paperwork for you. Normally, there are people that offer these services. You just say no necesito, which is I don't need it, no, and you try to do yourself, because sometimes these guys are taking a lot of money from foreigners. So my advice is you may try to do yourself. Because it's not really complicated. You know, and actually in iOverlander, there is step by step what to do, in which office you need to go, what is right and everything. So there are a lot of travelers that already did it. So I think that you must check just on iOverlander, which is the update, and where is the updated situation on border crossing. And don't be, one thing for sure is you don't need to be afraid of border crossing. Unless you have, for example, a drone in Nicaragua or Costa Rica, and they don't allow drones, so that is a different aspect that you need to know how to manage. Or you have, for example, animals, and you may need certificates for these animals, right? So every single case is different. But if you don't have animals and you don't carry weapons or or drum or something that is normally inside the list of the border that they don't allow in the country, you are good to go. But normally, all of this information is available. So you need to be aware that what they are allowing and what they are not allowing inside the country. For example, in Chile, they don't allow any sort of fruit and vegetables. So you need to get rid of those before passing. In some countries, they do, in others don't. So just take a look what are the requirements, and you just need to check this one day before, maybe two, if you want to consume all the food that you have, and they are not allowed in one country.
Okay, and then you mentioned insurance a little bit ago. What either personal or health insurance did you guys use, and any tips on vehicle insurance as well?
So we were using a French company called Chapka, because we were both European citizens. This company was for European travelers, maybe, and was well, meaning that covers you in all the countries in the world, pretty much almost all, and an important emergency that you have, you are covered, and as well as in case of repatriation. I know that this is an aspect that is not really interesting, but it's important that I mention this, because it happened that several times, unfortunately, some travelers pass away during the trip, because you don't want your family to take care of the situation, right? So it's better to be covered on this regard. So the one that we use for sure is Chapka. And I can advise it, because I use it a couple of times for dental emergencies. And they reimburse me pretty right away. I just need to prove that you went to a clinic, and you need to send them the invoice, and that's it, how they process. It was pretty straightforward. We paid more than 1,000, I guess, for both of us, euros, for 1 year. Car insurance, as I mentioned before, in North America, US and Canada, is fine. The one that you have, if you are traveling in North America, from any state is fine. It will cover you for Canada and US. But in Mexico, you need to purchase it in advance. There are several online companies that can do the work. You just need to insert your information, and then you will have your insurance pretty fast. When you go down to Belize, for example, in Belize, in every country is going to be different. For example, in Belize, you can buy your insurance directly at the border. So in the border, you will pass the border, you will tell them, I will need insurance. The border will indicate you an office, which is not that far from the border, for example, between Quintana Roo and Mexico and Belize, and you will buy the insurance on spot. And this may happen as well in other countries like Nicaragua or Costa Rica, I think. In some countries, you will buy them on the spot. In others, you need to purchase them in advance. But insurance-wise, it's not really complicated.
So on what is your best advice to other couples like you and your girlfriend spending so much time inches from each other 24/7?
This is the cabin fever, my friend. You know that we were working a lot before the trip. Okay, we were working a lot. We were not seeing each other often, because we had pretty much two jobs both to in order to save money. No, and when the trip date came, we were like a little bit like annoying each other again. So we spent the first week a little bit in a weird mood, both of us. We made a big fight about every single aspect we didn't like from each other. After the first 10 days. Eh? And then after this first fight, we put everything out there, what we don't like from each other, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And from this day, everything went perfect. I think that in order to have a nice trip, you need to be aware of all the defects of the other person. In our minivan, trust me, it was a really, really small environment. For us, living there, you need to know the other person 100%. Defects and nice things. And this is what we actually did start. We were doing it along the way. And you need to agree that some things sometimes will not be, anything is perfect. And you just need to work on that. You know, when something is not doesn't like you, you need to tell to the other person. Or if you, at one point you are really outside your head, you just go for a walk, eh? Because you are doing a road trip, right? You park the car, you go walking, yes. And that's it. And you can be relaxed.
You go for a nice hike.
Yes, exactly. So you need to reach compromise, I think, you know, beforehand. Otherwise, you will say goodbye to each other after a few thousand miles.
Yikes!
Well, you'd probably want to avoid that.
No, exactly. I mean, just, you know, to be sincere, to be fair, to try to make it work. So for us, it was important.
What do you think your average monthly cost was for fuel cost, which I assume was your biggest cost?
Yeah, and so it depends about the country where you travel. In, obviously, regarding gas, you're going to spend more in Canada and U.S. In Canada, our daily expense, everything, we had like $60 Canadian dollars per day, more or less. It covers absolutely everything. Because you need to make your calculations regarding the whole kilometers road that you're going to cover in this country, how many days you're going to stay in this country, and so you need to divide the meals that you're going to need. And so this is what we usually did for every single country. And U.S. and Canada were obviously the most expensive countries because of the kilometers and because of the cost of food. Keeping in mind that we never paid for accommodation. No, yes, we almost never paid for accommodation. So if you add camping fees or any sort of accommodation fees, your price is going to pop up really, really high. Because actually in North America is a higher part of the trip is accommodation. You can go to a hotel, motel, and even campings. I mean, for example, campings in certain national parks is up to $40 sometimes, from 20 to $40 if you're lucky.
No, that's too much.
Yeah, exactly. And we were doing production by camping. Imagine that you want to spend 1 month doing camping in the west part of BC or Alberta, and you need to pay at least $25 per day. So it's a high cost at the end, you know. But if you don't need to pay for it, you are just kind of better on finances, right?
It sounds like for Canada and probably the U.S., you estimate all total probably about 60 Canadian a day, which is going to be about 47, 48 U.S. dollars a day. And that would cover your budget for both fuel, food, other miscellaneous things.
Correct.
Okay. And then once you got into, let's say, Baja California or Central America, do you think that dropped down, if it was 60 Canadian, maybe to 40 or 50 Canadian? What do you think it would have been?
In Mexico, it's less expensive for sure regarding food.
Do you think that Central America and South America were roughly the same?
For the gas price standpoint, it's pretty much the same everywhere. I can tell you this.
Okay.
We changed just few cents, so don't be too much concerned about that. Maybe there is just one country in which you spend less money than all the others, which is Ecuador.
Yep.
Okay. Why? Because the government helps people for put the gas at the pumps, so you will pay less money there. But other than that, in all the countries, it's pretty much the same. Regarding food. As soon as you hit Mexico, the price for food is going to be less. in supermarkets or in local markets, but even in Mexico it's still higher than all the other Central Americas or Latin or South American countries. So for example, let's say that you are in Peru and you want to go eating at a local restaurant, you will spend 7 soles, which is like right now $2, $2 for a meal. I mean, it depends about the restaurant, but I'm saying the restaurant where we used to go, which is kind of normal for average people in Peru. So you just go to eat there for $2 and a half per meal.
That's amazing.
In Canada, to have a Subway, you need to pay at least $10. Yeah. You know, that's the difference, yeah. Right?
Yeah, there's a huge difference.
Yeah.
Okay. Jorge, during your trip with you and your girlfriend, what, if anything, really restored your faith in humanity?
I mean, for me, it was all the kindness that there are in people out there. You know, when I really love to meet new people. And in Latin America, starting from Mexico, you will find really, really beautiful humans out there that they don't mind about your money. They don't mind about anything material, right? They just want to know you. They just want to smile to you, to see you, you know, to know who you are, knowing the locals, and, you know, fill you up and fill you with a nice spark of life. This is my advice.
What advice would you give your 10-year younger self?
Okay, that's an interesting question. I will say to leave Europe before. In my situation, go to explore, because there is nothing you have to be afraid of.
If you could put any message on every billboard in Canada, what would that be?
You must go. The road is waiting for you.
Mm. Nice.
There you go. All right, Jorge, anything that we've missed?
I think that we covered pretty much all the aspects of the trip. And if anybody wants to ask any advice or any tip regarding Latin America, you know, they just can reach out to me through social media. And, we have 2 accounts in Instagram and Facebook with Destino Ushuaia as your name. It's just to give people advices on travel and to inspire people to travel. And if anybody wants to reach out to me, I will be happy to reply and to give you guys tips.
From your social media account to your website, how did you come up with that name?
It was actually the name given by my girlfriend. Ushuaia, because it was our final destination. And destino is in Spanish, like a destination. Destino, because we wanted to end up there. And we found that really, really nice name. And there was no name taken yet with this project. So we just went for it.
Yeah, it's really good. Love it. So let's wrap it up with some fun facts about you. What is your favorite genre of music? And between you and your girlfriend, who is the better singer between the two of you?
Well, I must say, we both like rock. So I think that I'm a little bit a better singer, but when I sing Spanish songs. Not English. So when I sing romantic Spanish songs, she just melts, and so she's happy.
Nice.
What's a favorite drink in the morning to get you going?
Coffee. A nice black coffee for me is more than essential. It's just there is no good morning without a black coffee for me.
And a favorite beverage at night to wind down after a long day?
Well, I can divide myself in two aspects here. I like chamomile. So I like to go, before going to sleep, I take chamomile tea. Or I when I with some friends, sometimes I some rum,
rum.
Sometimes like aged rum.
There you go. What's your best advice to aspiring overlanders and adventure enthusiasts listening right now?
They need to obviously check when what is the current situation in every city, in every state where they go, because obviously with COVID everything changes, and we just need to be more patient, but more aware of what a situation can be in a specific geographical place. On the same point of travel, I would like, advise everybody that they need to go for it. They just don't to be afraid to wait, because we never know, when it's going to be the last opportunity to travel. So it's better to take advantage of our decision of today. And that our world is so beautiful out there, and they just need to explore it. And above all, our countries here, Canada, the US, and Latin Americas, is we are blessed to have such a beautiful environment. So please go and explore.
All right, so let's cover again real quick how people can connect with you, just to make sure that we've got that clear. So Destino Ushuaia, could you spell that for our listeners just to make sure that they can connect to you? And that's going to be the same, I think, for your website, for Instagram and Facebook, right?
Correct. Well, it's Destino Ushuaia. So as we said, Ushuaia was our destination, being the southern city in the American continent. So I know this is a funny pronunciation, but I hope you guys will find out how to type it, which is Destino Ushuaia.
Yep, that is great. So Destino Ushuaia, and you can connect with Jorge both on, you've got a great website, social media, Instagram seems to be the primary for you, and then Facebook as well. Any more information you'd like to give or useful resources that our listeners should check out?
Well, in the website, I will actually introduce more travel material, like how much was our average spent per country, or these important facts for travelers, just to have an idea. Obviously, they will need to check which is the current situation for all of these aspects, and yes, they can take inspiration they can take a look at what we did, and if not replicate it, just to have an idea.
That's perfect. Jorge, thank you so much. Safe travels and adventures to you. A remote cheers to you as we look forward to our overlanding paths, hopefully crossing again sometime in person.
I would love that. I would love that. And thank you very much for having me at your podcast. I really, really enjoyed the time here, with you guys. And I wish you a really, really wonderful travel and so many beautiful experiences for you too.
Oh, that's amazing. Thanks, man. We really, we've really enjoyed talking with you. We really enjoy talking with everyone else that has these experiences, and we are very excited to hit the road and get going. So again, thank you for spending your time with us. You've been very patient, very nice, and very giving of your time. So we greatly appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, guys. Have a wonderful weekend.